I'm Sarah Molesky, and as part of the Rock Voices Oral History Project, we have Dr. Robert A. Rosal here with us today. How are you today?
Fine, thank you, Sarah. I hope you are as well.
I am.
Okay.
Well, why don't we start off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, some background information. You can start off with your childhood.
Right.
And then just kind of go up from there.
At an early age, I was a child. Now, I was born in Central Ohio. And lived with my mother and my grandparents on a, I would guess the best term would be truck farm. My grandfather was ran a greenhouse with my grandmother and grew a lot of vegetables for the garden and processed beef and lamb and things like that for customers. So I grew up there about a mile and a half from town. Went to school at through the Granville, Ohio school system. No one else in my family had ever gone to college, so I went to college. I was fortunate enough to go to Ohio Wesleyan University, which was not too far away, and did my undergraduate work there. And while I was there, I was interested in physical education and athletics. Was not much of a participant from the standpoint of skill, but eventually, from that, decided I wanted to go into coaching. Mm-hmm. I went to, and I also was interested in student personnel work there because of a dean of men that I got to like very much. I went to Ohio University to major in physical education and what was then called human relations, but basically it was student personnel work. Mm-hmm. Finished a master's degree there, and went to Oberlin, Ohio to teach in the public schools. I taught mostly junior high school science and coached football and baseball and for a while some junior high school basketball there. And I guess I was there 4 or 5 years and decided I really wanted to work in college. So I left there getting married at the same time and going to Hanover College in Indiana. Hanover College in Indiana was then a school of about 1,200 students, a small liberal arts college, and I coached again baseball and football there, and my wife and I ran a men's residence hall for the year we were there. That was my first real experience with student affairs, mm-hmm. and it was an interesting one. But while doing that, again, I decided that I, in order to teach in college, I knew I had to get a doctorate. And so we left there and went to College Park, to the University of Maryland, where my wife taught, and I went to graduate school for 3 years, finishing my doctorate about 1968, technically 69. Mm-hmm. We came here in the summer of 68. I was hired here to teach in the science areas of physical education, and as assistant football, actually freshman football, freshman baseball coach, because freshmen weren't playing varsity sports in those days. In the physical education department, I taught anatomy and physiology and sports psychology and kinesiology and those things. And I did that, I really kind of forgot how many years I did that. Before too long, I mean, became coordinator of the graduate programs in health and physical education, mm-hmm. and then department chair for several years. At the time I was department chair, there was a temporary vacancy in the vice president's office for a year or so while they were going through a vice presidential search. And so I was asked, through a search process, was appointed that position. The new president was hired, asked me to stay on in that position for a year. Then a search was run, and I was a successful candidate in that search, and I became vice president under, at that point, it was Herb Reinhart. Mm-hmm. And Herb Reinhart left after about 5 years. I was asked by the chancellor and the board of governors to become interim president, which I did, and was a candidate in that search and was a successful candidate there. Becoming president about 1985. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did until I retired in 1997. So, and since I've retired, I've been doing other things. I've done some other jobs just to keep busy.
What Slippery Rock eras have you been here for?
Say that again.
What Slippery Rock eras have you been here for?
Oh, eras. I guess it's kind of like how one describes eras.
Like State College and stuff like that.
I read through the questions. Mm-hmm. When I arrived, Slippery Rock was a state college. Mm-hmm. And then transitioned into Slippery Rock University at that point. And that's where we are today.
What changes did you see in the departments that you were hired into?
Well, in those days, the primary programs at Slippery Rock were education and health physical education. Mm-hmm. And the physical education side was probably the biggest of all of them at one point. During that period of time, we had 1,400 majors and about 45 or so faculty members. Way too more students, and that made sense, but that's why students were coming here, and that's what admissions would do, would be to admit them. The department of, I came into a structure that had a Department of Health and Physical Education. Somewhere in a short time after that, there was a reorganization in which, and it was in the School of Education, there was a reorganization in which it was taken from the School of Education, and its own school was created as the School of Health Physical Education. Mm-hmm. And then a number of years later, Recreation was added to that title. Mm-hmm. And so since then, there have been other changes of which I wasn't party.
Mm-hmm. What buildings have you worked in?
I spent most of my life in Morrow Fieldhouse. Mm-hmm. Before it was remodeled, and then the rest of the time in Old Main.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your first impressions when you got here? How did you feel about the campus and just how it looked? And
well, the campus, I think one of the things that people realize when they've been someplace for a while, and I realized that after a number of years as president talking to alums, that the campus, the state college or the university changes over time, and it's a different thing at different times, mm-hmm. depending on what the various emphases are in terms of the needs of graduates, etc. Mm-hmm. And I think that what was important to me then was that Morrow Fieldhouse then was pretty much state of the art. It was pretty much on in the forefront mm-hmm. of those kinds of buildings in the system. Mm-hmm. The old East West Gym were more typical of what schools had in the system. The penalty we paid for being in the forefront of that was probably that we still have it. And other places have added very many more facilities mm-hmm. in terms of those kinds of things. But I think it was clear from the beginning that it was a place that small enough that people were interested in the students. People got to know the people, I would say, faculty administrators knew students very well. In fact, most administrators taught. Many faculty members, many coaches also taught. All coaches taught, as a matter of fact. It was before the era of allowing coaches to coach and not teach. So people had very heavy teaching loads. At the same time made plenty of time for interaction with students in and out of class. Mm-hmm. And I think that was extremely important. The other thing was that it was clear that given the physical facilities available, the land available, that there would be great opportunities in the future for growth. Mm-hmm. And the institution was highly thought of. The physical education program itself was probably among the top five, at least in the country, and sought after a person who graduated from here with an undergraduate degree, had as much of an education as master's degrees from many institutions. Mm-hmm. So it was very good to be part of something that I think was mm-hmm. that accomplished.
What changes did you see the university undergo? Were they for the better or for the worse?
Well, Yeah, the, well, as I said, there are a whole lot of changes. Obviously, mm-hmm. there are physical changes.
Mm-hmm. That's the one thing people mostly talk about.
Yeah, the physical, I mean, the physical changes occurring in ebb and flow. Physical changes only occur after someone in Harrisburg decides there's going to be money. And after they decide there's going to be money, there has to be a long time and effort put into trying to spend the money.
Mm-hmm.
The best example of that is that the music building that was approved with the money, there was enough money to build a music building. It was three times that size.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they got it built, it was one-third of the building. So there were those kinds of problems. So there were a lot of changes, generally speaking, for the good in terms of the physical plant. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably the biggest change was, I can't tell you the exact year, but it was the movement on the part of faculty to unionize.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that well because I was a member of the faculty at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we had campaigns by two or three different potential partner unions or unions. And we selected one and then began to work as a unionized faculty, mm-hmm. which was new to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was quite a different, situation. And then that structure changed a little bit to the union and the arrangements they have today.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say by and large, by far, institution is better for the establishment of the union when it was done. And I think that with probably some arguable exceptions that occur periodically throughout the normal lifespan of administrations and unions, that it has been a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been good for the academic program, it's been good for students, and I think ultimately it is a change for the better.
Mm-hmm.
I think the nature of the student body has changed significantly because in those days almost everybody who was here was considering teaching. And that began to change for a number of reasons. One, of course, was that teaching jobs began to get less plentiful.
Mm-hmm.
But also people began to have interest in other things. And the university began to have interest in other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the what occurred then was a growth of academic programs, the hiring of faculty with excellent credentials in things other than education,
mm-hmm.
and it was a valuable time in the growth of the university in terms mm-hmm. of programs. And we were able to do some things that I think were quite valuable. And I think for one thing, we began the first dance program in the public institutions, in the state system institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I always kind of joke that with dance and art, we helped to bring a different kind of student to campus.
Mm-hmm.
And that was true. I mean, these were students who tended to function a little differently sometimes than a math major or an education major. It was just great to have a more diverse student group.
Mm-hmm.
So diversity comes about in many ways. I don't think we've been able to, in my period of time, I don't think we've been able to deal with the diversity in terms of race as well as I would like to have seen it done. But there's been progress.
Mm-hmm.
So things have changed dramatically in many different areas, there's no mm-hmm. question about it.
What were some of your activities on campus, both while you were as a teacher and while you were president?
Well, as a faculty member, I was involved for a lot of years in the university-wide curriculum committee, a function of faculty council, which was the governing body of the faculty before the union. It remained then as a faculty assembly group after the union, but it was a critical group in terms of developing curriculum and,
mm-hmm.
and those kinds of questions, and I was involved in that. I was involved for quite a number of years with a co-op activity group, and I was interested in that because a lot of what they funded were things that had to do with health, physical education, recreation, and I felt that I could be helpful to them in terms of making some of those decisions. So I was involved with that. Of course, I was coaching in the years before I became department chair. So I was involved in those things. Mm-hmm. You know, as president, it's kind of hard to pick out any particular, because you're basically...
You kind of do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, you're kind of involved in everything that goes on, whether you want to be or not. But on the other hand, you need to be. As president, I tried to be involved in a lot of things that had student involvement. Because I was trying to show, and I believe, that what we do is serve students, and what we do is provide education for students. Mm-hmm. When decisions are made, people need to think about how does that decision impact the education available for students, how does it affect students. Mm-hmm. So I was involved in a lot of things there, and I guess that pretty well covers this there.
What were some of your biggest accomplishments while you were here?
Well, that's probably something that somebody else will probably figure out at some point. You know, I think I'm most pleased about, I mentioned in a couple of situations. I mean, development of the dance program, I think, was something that wasn't expected, and I think it was something that got us some very positive notoriety across the education realm here. I had been involved with others in trying to develop a physical therapy program for years, probably 10 years before it came about in 1995. An awful lot of time and effort spent in developing that program. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it was another one of those things that changed the nature of the university dramatically at the time. Still is an outstanding program. One of the differences is that we had to fight so hard to get the program. A few years later, they were giving the program to almost anybody who wanted it. So that all of a sudden, when there were very few schools, all of a sudden there were now a lot of schools. Mm-hmm. At one point, I would not be off to say that we had 300 plus applications for a class that might have 24, 25 seats in it.
Wow.
And that continued for a while. And, mm-hmm. So I think, you know, those things were important. I think the trying to promote student involvement in things was important to me, and I think we were successful in some ways. Sometimes students are too busy to be involved, and there's just no question about it. But, but in order for education to function the way it should, there need to be student involvement in various activities. And we had two different occasions when students were very much involved in funding and moving forward with facilities. One was an addition of racquetball courts to the field house, which at the time was an amazing undertaking. The other was the student funding and development, a lot through the work of Bob Espirito with the recreation center, the student recreation center, which took a lot of work and effort and time, and students were involved in it to the nth degree. There was always some flack around the students weren't involved, but they were always involved and were involved in the final decision making of it. I think another thing that was very helpful to us, and to some outsiders they may not notice, but the little art facility that we had was a building that had been a student union and Lord knows how many other things, and it burned down once in its history and rebuilt. And we had the art department in what was the old lab schools, now the RISA Caruth Center. Mm-hmm. And we had been given money to do some work in that building. Not enough to do some work in that old lab school that was going to make it very usable. Mm-hmm. It was a mess. It was falling apart. And some of us made such a case to the chancellor that in terms of health and safety, that we were permitted to take the money that was designated for that building and use it to, for all practical purposes, rebuild what is now the art building, which is probably smaller than it ought to be and probably doesn't have everything it needs to have, but it gave the art faculty and the art students a place that was there, it was a place they could do the things they didn't do. And I think it was extremely helpful to help people see that the university was growing and changing. In the president's residence, my wife's encouragement, all of the artwork in the public rooms was artwork of our faculty or our students. And my purpose for that was, as we had a number of occasions at the residence, was to be able to show people that we were a liberal arts institution. We weren't any longer an institution that educated solely teachers. We did a lot of other things. And so the addition of that art building and the addition of the dance program and the PT program, and there are probably some others in environmental education and others that were, we had 10 or 12 new programs that we started in that period of time, mm-hmm. were things that helped show that Slippery Rock University was, in fact, evolving. It was changing and improving. And so I think that those are things that I think are pretty significant in the long run mm-hmm. in the history.
While you were a teacher, what are some of your best and worst teaching moments?
See, I said to someone, the problem with oral history, it's a good idea, but you're asking old people. It depends too much on memory. Best and worst moments. I think. I enjoyed almost everything I taught, and had very few occasions of any particular problems or issues in class. I think it was a period of time, graduate school, I taught a research methods course, and every graduate student at HBER had to take it, and we had one graduate program in health that was involved school nurses. So school nurses would have to take that course. And usually it was in the first two or three courses of the program, depending on when they started. And it was an interesting example because the school nurses were generally a little bit older than the rest of the student body. Mm. And it was really an eye-opener, and it's not a major story, but it was an eye-opener to the difference between the typical student body and the mature student. One day when it was snowing, it was getting pretty bad. I hardly ever called classes, so I figured people would get there. And the three nurses in the class always seemed to get there, mm-hmm. coming from around Meadville. And that night they came in and only about half of the class was there. It was probably a class of 16 or so. Mm-hmm. And one of the students, not the nurses, said, well, you know, there looks like a lot of people can't get here. Should we call off the class? And I didn't have to say anything. The three nurses immediately said, no. You know, we came all this way. We're going to have class. And so we had class. And I said, that's not an earth-shaking story, but it showed a difference in attitude of students, which mm-hmm. began to appear more and more as there were more non-traditional, as we would call them, students in the undergraduate class. I don't know the percentages today. I was president of a university for a few years ago, where about 33% of students, undergraduate students, were older than the normal age mm-hmm. for students. So it's a growing phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a major change. I don't know, there weren't any protests in my class.
I know it's kind of a general question, but.
I enjoyed teaching, and that's one of the things I missed about becoming an administrator was teaching. Mm-hmm. So I think that was one of the things in teaching when I was president, I used to visit a couple classes, and Coach DeSpirito had a class he taught in recreation administration. And I used to go there every semester to talk about leadership and talk about management. but always leaving about a half of the class or so, depending on the size, to answer questions. And that was probably the most exciting, because those were always the questions of, why can't I find a place to park? You know, how come the lights aren't on long enough? Why can't we stay in the library until 2 in the morning? You know, all those kinds of questions. But anyway, I can't do much better than that.
Who are some of the people that influenced you or were very significant to you during your time here?
Well, I had gone through, and I think that they go back, most of them go back that way. Bob Lowry, who was the director of admissions years before I got here, did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Lowry was, in fact, acting president when I was hired. When I interviewed in the spring, the president was President Carter, who was actually in the process of being let go.
Mm-hmm.
When I got here in the summer, Bob Lowry was the president and signed my letter. So I've always told people that I wasn't hired, I was admitted by the director of admissions. And Bob was a guy that I think I learned an awful lot about in terms of just kind of keeping your cool. The importance of not flying off the handle of things.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some others. Wayne Walker was a Texan who came here as dean of the School of Education. He used to say he was here on missionary work in Texas. And he was another guy like that. He had lots of stories to tell. And I think the one that struck me most in terms of the way I viewed things for years was that shortly after I became president, early in the fall, he and I had been meeting someplace. He said, drive over to the stadium. Of course, by that time, the stadium was there. And the leaves were changing. They were beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And pulled over. He said, look out there. Isn't that beautiful? I said, it really is. The hillside was just full of all the colors you could have. Just one of those beautiful fall days. And
mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. I said, it's really beautiful. And Wayne turned in his Texas way and said to me, well, you know, if you begin to think it's yours, you're in trouble. And I've taken that with me an awful lot in terms of the real privilege that it is to be a manager and administrator,
mm-hmm.
and how that privilege can't be wasted, can't be hijacked the way it has been hijacked more recently, at least in the
mm-hmm.
some of the things we read about in the paper with some leaders. The entity, just take the university. The university doesn't belong to anybody but the people who were there at the time using it.
Mm-hmm.
And the job of the president or any other administrator is one of stewardship, and it's one of seeing that the institution is better when you leave it than it was when you got there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought that advice was there. There were others. Bill Mizey was the old dean of physical education, just a guy with a million stories. And Bob Espirito, who a longtime coach, was one of the guys who hired me and got me here. And he's just retired a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were others. There were Martha Haverstick in health physical education, who's just been honored recently with a scholarship, I think, for women's leadership. And Ann Griffiths, who's retired not long ago,
mm-hmm.
were two of the women that I had I learned from very early on in my career here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there were lots of people.
Do you remember any major events or activities that happened while you were here? Any that really stick out in your mind?
You know, I was trying to think about that. I was looking at the question and I had to think, gee, what was that? I think I was so focused on what was happening on the campus that I think one, of course, was the passing of the bill to create the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize generally today, have no reason to, what a difference that made, because before that, there were 508, I think, school districts, and there were 14 of us, And we were all administered by the same people in this floor in the Ed Building in Harrisburg. And everything we did was treated as if it was another public school district. And it was a real problem in terms of getting anything done. The creation of the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education freed us from all of that. It gave us our own board, it gave us a lot of autonomy to do things. It gave us our own entree into the budget process. But as some of us said at the time, it eliminated a whole lot of bureaucracy, but it put us in a position of creating our own. And unfortunately, that's what things do, that's what organizations do over time. So unfortunately, we began to create our own bureaucracy. So I think, you know, I think that, I think there were a number of issues around the around the country and on the campus in terms of some racial unrest. And we had a couple of those that I think we worked through pretty well and got some favorable note for. So, you know, other than that, I don't have anything I can relate to.
Do you miss anything about being here, teaching, administration?
Well, as I said, I miss, basically what I miss is the interaction with people. And when I went, after I retired, and ended up doing a couple other presidencies and doing some other work, it was primarily because of the interaction with people and the ability to work with people and with students and to try to make some things happen on some campuses that I found to be very interesting. And I miss that. I never really developed a golfing hobby like a lot of people, so I could spend half a day on the golf course. But that's kind of what I've been doing until just recently. And I think I'm finally finished with that. But that's been important to me.
Well, do you have any words of wisdom for us, or for any future or current ROC members, students, that they should know?
Go to class and graduate. You know, I mean, that's what a lot of students forget that they're there for. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's one job. There may be other jobs you can pay for it, but there's one job, and that's go to class, study, and graduate. But I've used a quote at times. I have no idea where this came from. I have some ideas, but I can't find the one I was looking for. Mm-hmm. But I've used this a lot, and it's something to the effect of plant a tree in whose shade you shall never sit. And it speaks to doing the things you can try to do today, which will improve things for the future. And I think that's what all of us do as we move through organizations. You know how successful you are in the organization of education by probably years later, what are the people who took part doing. Too often we are measured how successful we are by how many students graduated in 4.5, 5.5, 6 years. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with the success of what you've done as a faculty member. That success has to do with what are people doing with that later on. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most pleasing things that can happen to anybody who's been in an institution for a while is when a former student approaches them and thanks them for whatever it was they did to help them through whatever it was that class, however many years ago that was. And I think that's important. I think we need to focus on what's important for students, what's important for the educational process, and spend less time. There are these cyclical problems, Sarah. I'm sure that perhaps in your time there will be at least one discussion of parking. There will be some other discussion about library hours. Mm-hmm. There will be some discussion about why money isn't spent for this or that or another thing instead of what is being. Mm-hmm. I mean, why are we doing intramural fields when we could be giving students more scholarships. I mean, they're all kind of, but those things are cyclical. And being here 29 years as I was, every now and then you discover a problem sitting on your desk that you'd say, didn't we solve that one?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my point is that there are things that are extremely important to get the job done. There are things which are ancillary to that. It can be a little bit of a pain in the neck, and we have to be careful where we focus our time.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be careful we don't spend 90% of our time on 10% of the problems. And that's easy to do in an institution of higher education where the spoken word is valued so highly
mm-hmm.
and exercised so often.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
How do you want to be remembered here at Slippery Rock?
Well, I think I always fancy myself as a person who was a facilitator to try to identify those people and those things which were important to our some objective, and to try to help people get their part of that done, to try to manage in a way that people can accomplish what they need to accomplish to get our major objective. I'd like to have people feel that I listen to them. If they don't, then I wasted a lot of time because I spent a lot of time listening. And I think that to be a good teacher, to be a good administrator, you have to listen. And you have to pay attention to what people are saying. I think with my background, people would say that I played by the rules. The rules aren't always the things that we like. But you can't have a successful organization if the rules aren't the same for everybody. And that if there are favorites, and if there are people commonly known as the old boy system, and I've experienced that. I've been in circumstances where that was rampant. But I would hope that no one saw that in me, and I would hope, I guess, that finally that people would think that as the things we did and the things that we accomplished, we did so with thought and that they were fair. And, you know, if that's the case, then that's fine.
Well, I don't think I have any other questions for you. Do you have any last comments or anything like that?
I don't know. I think you pretty well covered most everything I had, had noted as I went through the questions. I think one thing I didn't mention, and it was on top of my list, one of the things that I was most pleased about during the time I was here was the International Studies Program, where it was going.
Mm-hmm.
The International Studies Program, at one point here, we were sending overseas more than 300 U.S. students a year.
Wow.
And many of us felt that the purpose, one of the main purposes of the International Students Program was to benefit our students,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily to bring, while it's a purpose, students from over there here,
mm-hmm.
but to get our students over there. I believe that any time a student spends in a different culture, even if it's as close as Great Britain
mm-hmm.
in terms of culture, can be a life-changing experience for them, and I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a critical issue. We were trying to reach 100 countries with students from that many countries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we made it. We came pretty close, probably 70, 80 or so. But we were not trying to bring in what I call ghetto group recruiting of international students, meaning not to bring in 100 students from one country and then say you've got a lot of international students.
Mm-hmm.
The benefit here was that our international students had an international experience when they were here too. One election, the election when the Republicans under Newt Gingrich took over Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
That week I had a lunch with, I think, 17 or 18 international students from 12 or 13 different countries. And we had probably a two-hour discussion about elections, about elections in their countries. I mean, there were students there from all over the world, from the Southern Hemisphere into Asia and Europe, sitting in a kind of a nice fall day in the dining hall at, which hall was it now, the University Club,
mm-hmm.
in Slippery Rock, talking about elections from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. So I think that was important. I think that that it hurt us when the Board of Governors decided international students were too expensive to help. We had always charged international students, some schools do. We charged a smaller amount, but we showed that the international students we brought here, even though we, quote, technically waived tuition, we still charged them. brought with them more money than we spent on them. Mm-hmm. Same thing is true with out-of-state students. Mm-hmm. That's one of the changes I didn't mention earlier. When I came here, we probably had about a third of our student body was out-of-state. Mm-hmm. And when the Board of Governors decided they would crank the out-of-state tuition up in a hurry, we lost the biggest percentage of that number over 2 years. So I think that changed the student body again. I used to laugh at having students from New Jersey was as good as having international students. My wife was from New Jersey, so I can say that. So those are a couple of things I think I didn't mention. The new student apartments, we got that set of student apartments built really over the objections of powers that be in Harrisburg and one very strong local landlord in Florida who did everything he could to shoot them down.
Do you know why he tried to shoot them down? Was there any particular reason he was against it?
He had an interest in building student apartments.
Oh, okay.
We were building these on campus. Mm. So it was competitive, I believe. And that's all right. It's no problem being competitive. Mm-hmm. But we had to go through that to get them. And I think that was important to the institution. It was very helpful in terms of then moving forward and do what's been done now with mm-hmm. more student departments. The alumni house, I think, was an important thing that we did. So anyway, those are some of the things. And I appreciate, Sarah, your conversation. Mm-hmm. If you have any questions you need for an answer for me to fill things in, let me know.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay.